Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for a short episode today talking about an interesting point. And one of our good friends of the show, Brandon Croxton, is here to present it. But this is on first drive defense and some lack of success that the Ravens have had at that this year. So first of all, Brandon, thanks for joining.
Hey, Ken. It's always good to talk to you.
Now, you came up with this about 3 or 4 weeks ago in terms of an idea for a show. And it seems like the problem may still exist, although it may have lessened a little bit with some of the teams they played recently. But kind of take us through some of the information for starters.
Sure. So I noticed probably right at the midpoint of the season that we always seem to be falling behind in games. The defense was giving up long drives to start the game. We were falling behind 3-0, 7-0 to start the game. And, you know, historically, the Ravens have not been a team that plays well from behind. They're a much better team when they're playing from in front. So I just kind of looked into it a little more and saw some numbers. And, yeah, they do kind of indeed struggle with the opening of the game. They average almost 8 yards a play on the first drive.
Is that eight yards per play plays per drive?
I'm sorry, eight plays per drive for about 45 yards, and they're giving up about 3 1/3 points per drive, which is, extrapolate that over the course of a game or a season, that's up there with the greatest offenses of all time.
That's I was just going to say. So the 2007 Patriots, I think, were at 337 per drive. So you wouldn't want to have to face that offense for even one drive at the beginning of a football game. Right, and that's exactly kind of what the Ravens have been doing.
Yeah, exactly. And they struggled. Only four of the 12 drives, they've played 12 games so far. So the 12 drives, only four of them have not yielded points. There's been three punts and one missed field goal. So literally 9 out of the 12 drives have resulted in a scoring opportunity for the opposing offense. So, yeah.
Okay. And how many of those were touchdowns?
I believe it was 5 of them. I didn't actually.
Five would be 35, 38, maybe 41 divided by 12. I think I'm getting to about 3.4 if I do that. So that was about the neighborhood you were talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, first of all, very good information to just be looking at that over the time. Now, does that get better as the game goes on?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, starting in the second drive, they really tighten up a bit. They average about 5 plays a drive for 24 yards and 1 point a drive. 1 point a drive is absolutely excellent. That ranks up there as good as any defense in the league. So yeah, they really kind of make adjustments to what the other team is doing and are able to have some success.
Okay, so I should probably be looking at the defensive side of the ball here. So I'm going to try and look at that here for the year. So the very worst team in the NFL this year has given up 2.91 points per drive, and that's Cincinnati. The very best team in the league has given up only 1.42 per drive. That's Houston. And where are the Ravens in terms of first drives and then every drive thereafter? So first drive is about 3.4, yeah, right?
So first drives, it's about 3 1/3 per drive. Second drives are 1 point per drive. So they would be they're excellent on that second drive.
So just the second drive, not two plus. If we take all two and, plus, how do they
look? And then after the first drive, they're only averaging about 2.1 points per drive for the rest of the game after the first drive. So 2 through the end of the game, they're averaging about 2.1, which is that's probably right around league average, I would say.
It's about 19th in the league right now in terms of meaning I think 14th best is the way to look at it. 14th best, okay. or 19th worst, either way. So that's interesting. So now, you know, do you have any theories on why?
Yeah. So, you know, like, I think this is maybe some constructive criticism on Zach Orr as the coordinator. All teams scripts their first 10 to 15 plays on offense. And Zach Orr, maybe in his preparation, is maybe not foreseeing exactly what an opposing offense is going to do to, you know, based on the tendencies of the defense, you know, overall. So a little constructive criticism is, you know, maybe trying to foresee a little bit better on what an offensive coordinator is trying to do at the beginning of the game in order to kind of get off the field, force more third downs, which, you know, result in more punts and fewer more drives being stalled.
So two things I want to talk about here. One is advanced scouting, and one is how an install is done during the week. Okay. Now, offenses are kind of layered. Let's talk install first. Offenses are layered in the terms that they learn a lot of plays during the summer, and then they install a bunch of plays on a weekly basis that are the basis of walkthrough practices that occur and are closed to the media on the last day of practice each week. Now, they install them and they run the plays normally, and then the walkthrough practices on Friday are low-impact practices where they try, it means they don't tackle or hit or do any of that stuff. They just basically go at quarter or half speed, and they literally learn the dance steps of the plays that they expect to do. Defense doesn't really try and cover. They try and, you know, obviously present an obstacle to the offense, but the offense is basically allowed to complete their passes. The defense almost mockingly, you know, pretends to run, you know, at half speed a lot of that. Well, you've been a defender before in college, so you certainly know. And then they those plays the players may not have experience with before, particularly if they're trick plays of any sort, and they learn them, and they literally learn the dance steps. It's 1 2 3 4 break, 2 3 4 turn, right. You know, find the football kind of thing. And you can see them do it. They do it in camp as well when they're learning basically a large portion of the playbook as they move through it.
Right.
Anything to add to that? First of all, I want to talk about the
and a lot of times what happens is if another team in a previous week had success on that play, a team will literally replicate that play, install it as their own play, and use it at some point in a particular situation against the team, and probably in the same situation where the previous team had success.
Yeah. So. Could certainly do that. And that process is called advanced scouting. And those the Ravens have their own advanced scouting team. It's not really their regular coaching staff. They have a whole team dedicated to just that. And they look generally at the last four games for each team, and they try and figure out, you know, what their tendencies are certainly, and what plays they've run. Also, what's been effective against them, you know, defensively. So both sides of the ball, they're doing that advanced scouting, and that's part of the input to making a game plan, and in particular the set of scripted plays. So if we're looking at this from the standpoint of the Ravens are unsuccessful on that first drive defensively, why are the Ravens so easy to read as a defense when the Ravens can figure it out after one drive even?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. You know, I think a lot of it, you know, is success, you know, Zach Orr and, you know, talking with the defense is, you know, he's able to make adjustments, slight adjustments as to what the offense just showed them, what the offense had success with, and then kind of fixing those little leaks as over the course of the game to have more success. I mean, you know, it can be as simple as moving a defensive lineman or a couple of defensive linemen over a couple of feet. It could be, you know, moving, you know, having your corners have inside leverage as opposed to outside or vice versa. you know, there's a lot of small, you know, small adjustments that they make in order to have more success. And yeah, it makes it a little bit harder.
Maybe I'll ask another question that I think might be related, might not be, but defensive coordinators can either be on the field or in the booth. I think we're at a point where most offensive coordinators, but certainly not all, and certainly not if they're head coaches, are in a booth. It's more common than not, I would say. But for defensive coordinators, can be either. Okay, and we certainly see Mike Nolan used to like to be in the booth. Marvin Lewis liked to be on the field. And Zach Orr is very much a player's coach, likes to be on the field. What sort of support would he need from the booth to tell him what's going on that he can't really capture from the sideline?
Yeah, like you always have other coaches, whether it's position coaches, quality control coaches, up in the booth, somebody that's seeing the entire, basically an all 22 view of what's going on, mm-hmm. What an offense is doing to that defense, and is communicating those things to the defensive coordinator. Like, it's very much a team effort. Zach Orr, you know, being a former linebacker, I think having a field view probably helps him more than probably a bird's eye view would. So that's why he's on the field. But like you said, you know, some coaches prefer to be in the booth, but there will always be people in the booth telling exactly, you know, what's going on, you know, what matchups are an offense trying to exploit, and just relaying that information.
So it's always seemed to me like a booth coach was maximizing the value of communication in terms of him and the field, as his ability to see the field was at the highest possible level. A sideline coach is actually putting a great strain on that ability to have the bird's eye view communicate what's going on to him, because that's, you know, picture's worth 1,000 words, right? They can see something. I can take quite a while to communicate that thought out to them, even though they you know, they have their jargon and they you know, certainly have their terminology for it. But what he is maximizing is he's maxing his ability to communicate with players on the field and say, hey, you're not doing this right, or I need to see a higher level of effort, or you know, praising them when they do good things, either one.
Right, exactly. Yeah, like you said, Orr is definitely a player's coach. I mean, you see it after the defense makes a big play or a key stop. He's up there jumping on top, high-fiving everybody. So, yeah, like he is very much trying to focus on the relationship he has with the players and, you know, being able to foster that relationship in order to get success as well.
Hey, there was an old thing that Casey Stengel used to talk about, you know, trying to make sure that the five guys, you didn't have to work on the five guys who were on your side or the five guys who wanted you out of there. You had to work on the 15 guys who were on the fence on the baseball team to try and make sure they didn't go over the bad side. It's never struck me that Orr has been a coach that players did not really want to play for, with a couple of exceptions. And the exceptions seem to have occurred at safety, with Eddie Jackson and Marcus Williams really speaking out last year. Were there other examples of that you might point to this year?
I haven't heard any examples of people being kind of anti-Orr on the team, but it seems very much like, especially the leadership on the defense definitely has his back. Kyle Hamilton speaks all the time about, you know, how good of a job Orr does at putting the team in the right direction. Same with Marlon Humphrey. You know, two of your probably biggest, you know, players always talk about how important Zach Orr has been in, you know, getting a good defensive plan together. And, you know, that's important that, you know, your team believes in you, your players believe in you and believe that that you are doing the right thing and putting them in the right direction, because if they're not doing it, there will be players that absolutely voice that, you know, this was a bad call. This was a bad game plan. That's why we gave up 30 points or whatever. I mean, you could even look to Chuck Smith over in the offseason talking about the previous season. He talked about how Zach Orr was the one that really turned the defense around and fixed all the problems that were going on. And that was, that's how the defense became one of the better in the league at the second half of the season.
Yeah, he said not Dean Pease. You know, they brought in Dean Pease, but it wasn't him. But Dean Pease might have been an important communication link there, because Dean Pease is a Booth guy, and he definitely was watching from there and communicating things to Orr. And it may have been that that communication may have been something they were looking for, that they were not getting from whatever other coaches were responsible for last year. And I'm not trying to cast aspersions. I'm just saying it's one of the things that you could posit as a reason why they brought Orr back. Brought Pease back.
Sure, absolutely.
Let me go on with something else here, because the Ravens have been destroyed in snap count on the season, and they just got beat 80-57 in this game. They've only had three games out of 12 where they've had 60 or more snaps in the game, which is unbelievable to me as someone who's, you know, followed this team for years. The average number of snaps in an NFL game is probably about 64 on offense, and to have, you know, there's a fair amount of peaking in that range too. It certainly with between about 61 and 67 snaps, you'd have a fair percentage of the total games would fall into that area. And the Ravens have just not been able to sustain drives and get enough offensive plays. And part of this, I guess, is on the defense too, that they're allowing a lot of plays. Do you think the first drive situation that they put themselves in could have an impact on that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Like they routinely fall behind in the play count over the first drive or two in the game, because if you look at it like this past game against the Bengals, it was a 13-10 advantage, which is not a huge one, but it still is an advantage. There's been others that have been more drastic. The Chiefs were 20-12. The Texans were 23-15, and the biggest one was the Bears outsnapped them 24-3 in the first two drives. And when you fall that behind, you're never catching up. And the more plays you run, the more worn down a defense can get. And especially when you get kind of past that 60 mark, that's when you can really see a big drop in, you know, the ability of a defense to stop and, you know, get stops as well.
You played a position that rotated, because you played on the defensive line at Howard. So my question would be, do you think it's more related to total snaps, which I think is very significant, particularly when you're dividing them up among a limited pool of players in these games where the Ravens have had like four linemen, or is it also fairly closely related to consecutive snaps that you're forced to play occasionally? It seems like a lot of the really heavy breathing that you see on defense and hips might be also related to that. Which do you think is the bigger factor?
I think they're probably about even when you refer to total snaps and just consecutive snaps. I mean, when every time you snap on defense, it's not only a physical toll, but it's also a mental toll, because on offense, every offensive player, when the play is called, knows exactly where they're going, and they're just going exactly where they need to go. Defensive players are reacting. So they might have a particular assignment, but they are then reacting to what the offense is doing. And so you have a physical toll of just, you know, the physical toll that football allows, but also the mental toll of, oh, okay, they just did that. Now we need to think about what they're doing next, or, you know, they're going to run this play next, or they're going to do this next. And so there's that mental toll that also wears on a defense more so than an offense, which is why you often see when you get in those high snap counts and those high play counts, the advantage almost always goes to the offense. And you know, we've seen it time and time again with our defense. When they're getting in those 65, 70 plus snap counts and that game isn't put away, you know, we know we might be in for some trouble there.
Yeah. And that's it. A lot of the fourth quarter situations the Ravens have gotten to themselves in the last 4 or 5 years have been a case of very high snap counts. And sometimes I think game strategy needs to change in those situations. You need to go for it more on fourth down for one thing offensively, just to extend drives. And it has, there's a redraw value to it too. If you go, let's say you go for it at your own 40, up 7 points or whatever, and you've played a lot of snaps already in the game, and maybe you just had a long drive and you're at risk of three and outing, but it's still the better choice to go for it there a lot of times, even if it's like fourth and two, fourth and three, because the redraw value on the other side is that the other team is going to have a short drive, even if they get the ball back right there on that play, and shortening that drive from 10 to five plays or 10 to six plays could make a real difference there as well. I think with just how efficient offenses are in today's NFL, I don't think there's that much difference starting at the 35 or starting at the 50 a lot of the time.
I've been saying for 15 years that I would love to see a team literally go for it on four. If it's fourth and two or less, go for it every time, whether they're in their own, at their own red zone or they're at the red zone of the other team, go for it every time, because more often than not, you're going to get that first down. Those first downs put you in, punts turn into field goals turn into touchdowns. That's more points that gives you an advantage of being able to win a game is when you score more points. And also that wear and tear that goes on a defense, those plays, even if you get a stop, you're still putting a little bit more wear and tear on a defense as well. So yeah, I'm firmly in believing.
Yeah. We have a, there's a system of demagoguery still in place with NFL color commentators, because they all grew up, basically they all played in an era, most of them, that was 10 to 20 years ago was when they were playing. Mm-hmm. And this football is still played very conservatively, very few fourth down attempts in that era. We're starting to get a little bit more, we're starting to get a few more football players who actually understand some of the math or have had it explained to them or whatever it is. The two-point conversion being an obvious one. Down when you're down 14, you cut it to 8. Going for too late is something that's been, it's been very slow to be adopted by the game.
Yeah,
and it's one of the most obvious mathematical moves to make, and yet coaches just have not been willing to do it. The fourth down thing, the pace has been glacial in getting that changed into the game. But I think part of it is that you've got these color commentators, and a lot of times the announcers are just as bad because they've been doing their job for a long time too, that basically you're telling them, yep, that's the right move. That's the Baltimore Ravens across the way from you. You can't go, you're on fourth and one at the 50 yard line. you miss that opportunity.
I'd love to see the Ravens go for it all the time on, fourth and two. I mean, especially when you have a guy like Lamar, that added threat as a runner. Every time I see that punt team, even when they're at the 35, I'm like, oh man, that's I certainly understand, when it's like later in the game in the fourth quarter or later in the third quarter, you're playing situational where a field goal might put you up 2 scores or even a field goal might put you up 3 scores. Those are the times to kick the field goal and play it conservative. But kind of in that first 2.5, maybe even 3 full quarters, I want to see you go for it every time.
Right. I mean, you're much more likely to be closer to a neutral game script in those cases. And then it's just the math should take over. Basically, the simple math is this: any fourth and one anywhere on the field, it's always the correct decision to go for it, including from probably your own 9-yard line or 10-yard line. It might not be possible from a 9-yard line to have a fourth and one, but anyway, let's get back to the topic here for a second, because one thing the Ravens have consistently done is to defer when they win the toss. Given their lack of success on the first drive defensively, is there any reason to believe changing that would be a good idea?
I'm still of the mindset that it's better to defer and take the ball in the second half, because one of the biggest advantage is basically that middle eight, that last 4 minutes of the first half and those first 4 minutes of the second half. Like, if you're able to basically get that 2-for-1 where you are the last team to score right at the end of the half, and then you get the ball and you're the first team to score in the second half, I mean, it's a potential 14-point swing or, 10 or whatever. But, the ability to have that is probably the most important is the biggest advantage of, you know, any game, and especially with it's just so randomly, you know, as a coin toss can determine that. So I think you have to take that advantage every time.
I agree on deferring every time. Slightly different reason. And my reason is just basically that anytime you can make your decision offensively later on how you want to do, the offense drives, you know, whether or not they want to kill clock or score. And anytime you have the ability to make that choice later, you're putting yourself in a better position. You may or may not be able to control the end of the first half and the end of the game in terms of who has the last possession. Every team that's a central part of what they try and do is they try and have the last possession in each half.
Sure.
But making a later decision is a great thing.
Yeah.
Brandon, outstanding topic, a very cool short and an interesting topic that got us down a few rabbit holes here. Tell folks where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah, sure. So I'm on Twitter at bcroxton99. Love talking football, season ticket holder, and hoping we turn things around against Pittsburgh. That's always my most hated rival. I always say my favorite team is the Ravens. My second favorite team is whoever plays Pittsburgh. I'm always rooting for, I'm a hater in that way.
you had fun rooting for Josh Allen then this last Sunday, but
absolutely.
Anyway. Yep. All right. Other folks out there, thanks for listening as always. If you have questions, please use hashtag #FilmStudyMailbag in Twitter. You can also do that on Reddit. And you can hit me up with an email if you want at filmstudy21@verizon.net with your questions. I'm trying to make some of them into video shorts. That's a new format I'm doing, and I'd like to do one per day. If I have enough questions, I'll do it that way. Otherwise, I have to come up with the topics myself, and I could do that, but I'd like to hear from you as well. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
All right. Thank you, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.